Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up? Today on the show, we have Steve Old, head of business acquisitions at Strategic Blue, a cloud FinOps specialist. And Steve, obviously prior to joining to Strategic Blue, had quite a varied background and actually at a young age was leading and managing businesses. That's cast him across various sectors, including the hospitality sector. So really excited to have you on the show today. And how you doing, mate?
Thank you, Rich. I'm really well. Yeah, looking forward to a week off next week. So you've probably got me the most relaxed you're ever going to get me. But yeah, really looking forward to talking to you today.
Oh, awesome. And listen, I always like to start the show by giving our listeners a bit of insight into earlier life and earlier learning. So maybe we can go back in the time machine and start, get a bit of an insight as to your journey, your scaling journey. How did it start? And also, what are a couple of the key things that you learned during your journey that has helped you at Strategic Blue?
Absolutely. So early life, before even work, I made online computer games in languages that no longer exist. And that was really good fun. It was a passion. And it ignited a passion for IT. You know, I started programming computers when I was about six. And back on a Spectrum ZX. And I've always, because of that, had a good understanding of how computers work. I was working in the open source world in my gaming, and I just kind of got fed up of it. And then just realized that, you know, as a young man, money was quite important because it let me go out and things. So I started working in hospitality. And then by the time I was 18, well, before that, I even started as a climbing wall instructor and then became a manager of a climbing wall. And then I, by 18, was actually running my first pub and kind of went on from there, hotels and stuff. And then a bit later in life, when I realized I was working a lot of hours and I had to kind of either make a decision to kind of double down and try to do something like get a Michelin star or something like that in one of my sites or change career. And I decided to change career and went back into IT and was refreshed enough to do it. You do ask an interesting question. What did all that early stuff teach me? And I quite regularly look for people on their CV to see whether they've worked in hospitality or something like that, because it's one of those industries where it doesn't matter how clever you are, you've just got to work. Like, there isn't a smarter way of pulling a pint. There is a better way, don't get me wrong, but it is the same amount of work, moving barrels around, waiting tables. And I'd kind of floated through school, not in an arrogant way, but to get the grades I was happy with getting, I didn't have to put loads of effort in. So I never really learned how to graft at school. And hospitality taught me that, because I'm quite a competitive person and someone else being better at it than I was, I didn't enjoy. So I just had to learn how to work. And I honestly can say, I don't think I would be anywhere near where I am in my career if I hadn't have learned that work ethic. And so I still look for it in people to this day. Or people that had paper rounds is another good example. Yeah. Where you've just got to get up early and do a job.
Interesting. I mean, graft, that's an interesting word, right? And I guess in scaling businesses, it is, you know, the hard graft. You've got to go through the steps to get to your mission, right? So I can totally see the similarities. And I guess that's obviously, it seems like it's played out as you've more moved toward Strategic Blue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was quite interesting. I think a lot of people have this, but you look back on your career and it all makes sense looking back. But if you looked at it from the beginning to where you end up, it would make no sense. And I think that's been a big part of it, you know, a desire to be problem solving, to get to the bottom of things and to just, I'm one of those people, and I think there's a lot of us out there who I actually don't feel particularly accountable to other people. I feel very accountable to myself. And I want to feel like I've done the right thing. I want to feel like I've done a good job. And I think in scaling, that's really important, because sometimes you've just got to sit there and do it and hit the phones or spend the time doing those things that keep you working late that night, because that's what's needed to win that logo that helps you win the next logo and, you know, start that domino effect.
I mean, you touched on another good point, accountable to yourself. And if a lot of people talk about accountability and, you know, making as a leader, you have to make certain others are accountable. But how does it play out, being accountable to yourself? I mean, I was wondering if you can walk through maybe a little use case of how you can make yourself accountable in this pretty rapid moving, you know, industry of scaling.
Well, a very wise sales director once told me the most important skill in sales is self-reflection. And I actually think you could say that for almost any job. If you're not looking at what you did well and what you didn't do well and taking the right things forward with you and the bad things leaving them behind, you don't really progress. And in terms of being accountable to yourself, I think, especially in startups and scale-ups, sometimes things aren't going to work. Your initial big dream, the way you thought it was going to be, might not be the right answer. And you can try very, very hard at something and then have to flip to find the right thing. And they call it failing fast in DevOps, right? And I think it's a really important thing. If you know you have tried as hard as you can at something and you've done what you can and it fails, that is okay. You've got to be able to dust yourself off and maybe, you know, if you spend a lot of time thinking about how other people might perceive that failure, I think you could end up, you know, in a horrible trough, in a hole. So for me, it's right. I know I did my best. I know the mistakes I made. I'm going to take the things I did well. I'm going to leave the things I did badly. And I'm going to try something else now. Because, you know, working out your market fit, working out your pitch, all these kind of things, you don't get right first time. And you've got to be resilient. And I do think that's a lot easier if you feel that you're more answerable to yourself and that you've done your best and that you're going to continue to do your best. That's really helped me, I think.
And, you know, you've taken all those learnings at Pour a Pint. So obviously, your team members are very happy. You can pour a good pint. But, you know, the graft side of things, you know, being serious, the graft side of things, being accountable, making certain that you learn lessons. As you entered Strategic Blue, how did this play out? And how did you make use of your toolkit?
That's a really great question. One thing I've learned about myself over the last few roles is that I am very good at enacting change. I am not particularly good at putting myself through it. So I have struggled with my first 6 months in any of my roles looking back, actually, but I didn't realize it until I was a bit older. And what got me through the fact that I do struggle with the change where, and I think the reason for it is because it's hard for me to get a feel for how well I'm doing within myself. And so I'm kind of, I'm doing my best at it, but what, you know, and you're, if you're being self-reflective, you're constantly looking at in a shorter kind of feedback loop, what I've got right and got wrong. And so taking that in, coming into a new company and kind of going right. And in any job, what you think the company is and what it ends up being when you get in are very different things. I think actually in Strategic Blue, that was to my benefit. The feel of coming into finance, into fintech, I felt compared to kind of a DevOps transformation world might feel very stuffy. It might feel very highly educated people with massive maths backgrounds. But actually what was brilliant for me was the openness of the people. And so I was able to, you know, work with them and get a feel for the company a bit quicker. And they were very, very reassuring of me as I was working through. And I'm not used to that because I've always been very much in myself. And so when I was maybe giving myself a bit of a harder time and driving it, they were kind of going, no, this is going in the right direction. You're making those changes. And they really supported me in making those changes because I did come in and feel like I wanted to make some quite big changes to how we went to market and things like that. And I was very supported. And so sometimes you feel like I've done my best, but actually I've hit a wall. Actually here, it was really gratifying to feel like I've done my best and been given the license to do it. And that was really quite different for me. And, you know, one of the benefits of joining a smaller company that's scaling up, right, that you can actually have that impact that drives you and makes you enjoy getting up in the morning.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned that you had the license to make the changes. What changes were you bringing to the table and how did you implement? How did you go along and make certain that it wasn't just an idea, it was actually sort of rubber on the road?
So behind the scenes of what Strategic Blue do is quite complicated. It requires complex mathematical modeling and risk and stuff. What I really wanted to do was bringing simplicity into the message, into the story, into the feel that the customer's got. Because when you've created something really clever and complex, it is quite enticing to tell people how clever it is. While I wanted to turn it around, and if people wanted to get into the weeds of it and understand the complexity, then absolutely, we still want to be open with them. But I really wanted to try simplifying the message and making it a little bit more generic. We had done a very good job of selling to people with kind of PhDs, with research backgrounds, with very, you know, with fintechs actually, because they got what we were doing. So that was one of the pieces. The other thing is I'm a big believer in a company where you don't know how it's going to go moving forward. You don't know how quickly you're going to explode, you know, because you've joined to help a company explode, right? That's why you join a scale up. You are better off if you start getting a process in place that you can manage rather than just managing the people. So one of the things we did is basically rip out the CRM, put a new piece in, and the CRM guides people through step-by-step what they need to take someone through the sales process or the buying process. So we're making sure we're gathering the right information. And so that we knew by doing this and testing it early on when we were, you know, more experienced people, we could bring in newer, fresher faces to be able to join the journey at a faster pace as we needed to and scale, because some of the guardrails for them, some of the process managed their behaviors to allow them to just be successful and not have to try to remember everything they had to do. And that was one of the things I really wanted to change and was given full right to very quickly. Kind of going into a company saying, I want to totally change the CRM and how we work, I thought they'd go, maybe prove yourself first, Steve. But they went, if it's going to work better, show us how it's going to work and do it. And that made my life a lot easier, because actually, if you think about it, helped me learn what the processes were and the sales process was and all that. And yeah, and you know, to this day, we're still using that system we put in. We're tweaking it. We're learning from it. You know, it's a constantly improving process, but we've brought on, you know, 10 new people in the last year or so, and they have been able to get to speed within a, you know, weeks to early months rather than kind of 6 months before they can get their head around the product. So that's been really satisfying.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, at the top of that answer, you mentioned clear messaging. And I'd just like to explore that a bit more. I mean, firstly, you know, maybe give us a bit of a background as to what it was before and what is clear messaging and how has it helped you move forward and move towards the mission of the company?
Great question. So starting with what our messaging was, our messaging was, as a company, we've been built out of the kind of Morgan Stanley and out of the trading background. So a lot of our people are ex-Morgan Stanley electricity traders. So they have an incredible understanding of commodities and commodity trading. Now, the belief behind our company is that cloud can be traded like a commodity. And it is, and I learned this on my interview to give you an idea, an isomorphic economy with electricity. So these two, you can take the learnings from the electricity market, which is really mature, and you will be able to use that to map out the future of the cloud market in terms of how it can be traded and how the finance will work. So the concept of the company was to use these techniques learned in electricity to help people buy cloud in a better way. And that's me trying to simplify what the messaging was. But as you can imagine, that quite quickly opens some very complicated questions. And then you end up, doesn't matter how simply you open it, you end up in a rabbit hole really quickly. And some people love that. Some people kind of go, I don't know about electricity trading. I have no idea what to do with my cloud. How am I meant to marry this upon this call? And, you know, so is this anything to do with me? Maybe we don't use enough to trade. We're not really trading and that kind of thing. Other people were like, I love this. I love the idea of what you're doing. And it ran really well. But what I wanted to try to do was make the messaging, firstly, a bit more productized, a bit more product-based and a bit more kind of benefits-based. And something that we sell into different audiences, right? We have a technical audience and we have a finance audience in our kind of buying portfolio, because we speak a really nice language of the CFO, but it is a technology-led thing that we're doing because it's cloud resale. So we need to be able to speak to both parties. So it's getting a message in your elevator pitch, at least, and then, you know, building into that as you go. It doesn't matter which person's in the room, they should be able to take something away and go, that helps me in my job a little bit. So the message we have now, I'll just try to whip through it off the top of my head as I would to someone I was being introduced to, but strategic blue principally do three things. We help organizations buy cloud in the way they want. That might be that they can pay on payment terms that suit them, in a currency that suits them. It might mean that they can use up a budget before they lose it, like you used to be able to in the old days buying tin. It might be that you can have a standard monthly bill with true-ups, so you don't have that challenge with POs. And that's something that all procurement people have been able to access for years in IT, but suddenly in cloud, because it's sold in such a generic way, because it has to be, because it's there for the masses, they've lost that in the procurement world. And so that's how we start with our pitch. And that, as you can see, is really bundled up to hit the procurement team, the finance team, who are having that challenge in cloud. And so we've hopefully ticked a box for group one. Our second piece that we do is we help people understand what they're buying. The cloud providers are very, very transparent, which is brilliant. They tell you everything they've used down to the minute, to the second, and some services now down to the millisecond. But the person that has to pay the invoice gets a massive long document that is very hard for them to understand because they're not a techie. So what we've done is we've built the bridge between the two departments. We give them reports that both teams can understand. So let's go back to kind of one of my previous experiences. I used to have a really brilliant customer who I got along with very well. And I used to look after the DevOps team that looked after him in a professional services organization. And he'd go, Steve, my bill's gone up by 10%. Why? That's such a generic question, right? Asking me that, I kind of think, well, this isn't really what I'm meant to be doing day to day. It's a really hard question to answer. I'm just going to carry on doing what I'll get told off if I don't do by everyone else. So I'll go and get some techie stuff done. And that's how techies feel, right? You know, you're the finance guy, you work it out. But they, you know, no offense to them, they haven't got the tools. It's not that they haven't got the intelligence. They haven't got the tools. They haven't got the context. So what we've done is we've created it so they get a report where they can go, hey, the bill's gone up by 10%, Steve. I can see what we've used in the last 6 months and the top things we've used. And there's this new thing, which has only started this month, called DynamoDB. Were we expecting it? And I can go, yeah, it was part of this project. It was signed off. You can sign off the invoice. And I tell you what, the finance guy doesn't know what DynamoDB is. Doesn't need to, but they're speaking a language I understand. And I can understand that it's gone up by 10%. There's this new project. That makes sense. I, you know, was part of the team that built it. And so we're trying to reduce the feedback loops. And so there, hopefully, we're selling to both departments, because the finance team and the technical departments often are at loggerheads about being able to understand the sign off these bills. And the final piece of the jigsaw is that we help people get the best price while doing it. We have technically and financially trained solutions architects who help people review infrastructures to find better ways of and more cost-effective ways of doing it. And then we do our piece that is really unique, is that we will create commitments for people, discounts that suit their project, so they can be of a duration that suits them. So if you've got a project of 18 months, we will create a discount that lasts 18 months for you. The cloud providers have to do 1 or 3 years because they have to be generic. And so we are trying to make it really easy for people to get discounts, find it easier to onboard into cloud, to use cloud more because it can fit into their plans, into their roadmap, into their projects in a way that feels cost governed. And we call it paying attention as a service. We are constantly looking for opportunities to help people save money and manage that. And that's helping the technical communities, helping them not have to handle some of this finance stuff they don't want to do. And I've kind of extended it there to explain it a little bit, but hopefully you can see that we've tried to make it that it's some products that people can understand, that it's hitting the different communities we're talking to. Because if you go into a meeting and just target the finance community, the techies are falling asleep. If you go and talk to the techies and only talk to the techies, the finance people are thinking, why am I wasting my time here? And that's one of the things we've really tried to impact and affect.
No, I love it. You know, I did get excited when you were talking about the electricity market and the comparison, I must admit. But how you've broken it down there, it's very clear. And one question I've got is, you know, you've mentioned the people that you're targeting, the finance and the tech guys. How does this clearer messaging also help internally as your new members are onboarded and what have you?
Well, absolutely. One of the things we've done is we have signed up to a training service, an online video training service. Not sure if I can name them. Feel free to remove it later, but we use Udemy for Business. And what I love about it is we create our own internal videos of our pitches, of our products, of demos and stuff like that. And we upload it there for the team to be able to use on demand. And so they are getting this consistent, clear messaging that we are telling internally and externally. You know, we have a glossary of our terms in there and that kind of stuff. And so they can just know that they're living, breathing, they can hear multiple different people within the organization using the same kind of terminology. And I think that really helps because as you get bigger as well, inconsistency is such a challenge to scaling. if you've got different people with vastly different messages, don't get me wrong, right? You have to tweak your message. You have to meet the room. But if you're at least off the same hymn sheet, it doesn't matter if you're singing a slightly different key when you're speaking to different parties, right? But if you've got different people selling different sounding things to other people, then you're going to end up with that nightmare problem, is that you are not standardizing. And if you don't standardize, if you don't have a clear product set that you can repeat, and I call it the sausage machine, you know, you should be able to put people through it and you get something out that's pretty much the same every time. And if you can't do that, scaling's impossible. You're going to just continue to be like a batch house. You're going to be able to do bits and bobs, and you'll be able to do some immensely interesting projects. Don't get me wrong. Like, some of the most fun things I've done have been things that don't fit in the sausage grinder. But if you really want to scale, you have to find a way of serving 80% of the people with 20% of the effort.
And that comes back to the process that you mentioned a few minutes ago, and the knowledge that you create off the back of, in this instance, was a CRM tool that you ripped out and you put back in. How has that played out in Strategic Blue? You're ripping out a CRM, you're putting in a new process, you're building the knowledge, and you know, you got these new folk coming in. Already, they've got, I guess, the drive, they've got the car, they've got the wheel, they've got the engine. All they have to do is press the accelerator, right? So how does that play out from a scaling point of view? I mean, it must minimize, it must get you closer to your mission a bit quicker, right?
Well, absolutely. One of the things we've tried to do, especially with the training and the CRM, is we want people to at least be able to do some aspects of the job within 2 weeks. That's the kind of idea. We want our training to be in place that they can do that. Now, there is a lot of contextual knowledge that you can only gain with experience, right? We all know that in any role. And in a scale-up, having lag time of staff is a real challenge. You absolutely want these people to be as useful as possible as soon as possible. So if you put in a CRM that for people to move from, you know, we call it the data collection stage. So after people have been, we've qualified them in, we need to gather some data about them. We need to help them understand their usage, to help them understand their savings, right? For people to be able to move out of the data collection stage, they have to have certain criteria met to move on to the next stage. So before we can build a proposal, we have to know that we've got access to the data. We have to, and so it's guiding these people through that. Yes, they've understood the message and that piece, but sometimes the hardest bit to work out isn't your message and your story if you've got experienced sellers or even new sellers, because you can get that, because people understand stories. Now, and that's always been my secret to sales. Just tell stories, not saying tell lies. I'm just saying make it a narrative. And so your people will pick that up. Right? Actually remembering who to ask what to, the order of the sequence. If you can make it so that their machine tells them that, so they try to move it across, you haven't asked this person this yet, or you need to find out this piece of information. It A, helps them learn because they'll remember that for next time. But B, it just means the customer feels like they're being really well looked after and nurtured, because it's everything is happening in the order that feels like it should be happening. And it really has had a massive impact, where we've gone from probably 3 to 4 months before we could really throw people in at the deep end. And to now, you know, our aim is two, let's say it's between 2 and 4, but that's still a massive change around when, you know, especially if you go out for investment, right? If that's where you are as a scale up, you're going out for your next round of investment and you've promised them, you give me this money, I'm going to hit these numbers. Well, if they give you that money and then you've got 6 months of training all the people you've just hired, all that time you're spending training is drag on those people that are doing the normal works time. And then these people are costing money without adding to the bottom line for the business. And we just felt that, you know, for where we are, for the growth we want to see, it is so key. And we just spent a bit of time, you know, sometimes you've got to do a load of stuff that feels like it's not going to have an immediate impact. But if you do it earlier, it makes such a big difference later down the line. And I've got it wrong in the past in my scaling in the hospitality piece, where actually I didn't get training right early enough. And then you're opening your sixth site and it's still taking key bodies out of other sites to do the training. And you're just thinking, why didn't I train a trainer? You know, and you know, that's what we try to do here. But here we've actually tried to even automate a load of that. And I can't remember if I've told you this in the past, but we put in something which I've stolen. And one thing I will say to you, steal ideas from everyone you can. And I stole a brilliant idea from my previous organization, which is monthly business objectives. So people that come in their first X months, especially salespeople, you incentivize them based on actually going out and doing a bunch of learning and bringing it back to you and presenting it to you like you're a customer. And you're able to learn so much about them. One of the things I love about it is I leave the questions really generic. So it gives you a real insight into A, how they're going to learn, and B, how they think, because we can't work all that out in interviews. You need these things, and it's better to do it while there's some guardrails on and it's early on and you can learn how to nurture people. And that we think has been really key in our ability to bring on a good number of people in a short amount of time.
Just to wrap up on the training discussion, how have you guys viewed it, well, training and knowledge sharing across departments, across sales, across products, across DevOps and tech, et cetera? How does that work out for you guys?
So, as we've discussed earlier, I'm background in gaming and I love gaming still to this day. And so I'm a massive fan of gamification. So what we actually do is part of our kind of progression thing is badges. So you have to go through a set of training and kind of do a base level assessment, which some of it's presenting back, some of it's a questionnaire, and then you get a badge. And an amount of badges helps you progress onto your next stage within the organization, right? In terms of pay rises, in terms of next job roles.
Yeah.
And we actually say to people that only so much of it should be in your specialist area. Mm. So we're helping people go out and drive this. Now that has a few benefits that you mean you actually have people that can cover annual leave and stuff. When you're a small company and your head of, for us, pricing's really key, your head of pricing's out. Well, yeah, their team can help, but actually having someone else who's got a decent knowledge of pricing, but also management experience to be able to help cover really makes a big difference. We're also very lucky in the fact that well before I joined, James and Mike and co set up some really brilliant core values. And one of our core values is that everything we do, we achieve as a team, and that, we should always be learning and we should be applying intellect in everything we do. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually built into the very kind of core levels of what we do. So, we've got our core values, then we've got our OKRs for people that know and use those. And then you're managing those downwards into your organizations and your tasks and your stories that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But having that there, it really helps. We have, we use Slack, we have a praise channel in there. So we're trying to share out the benefits and we're just trying to make sure that the right people are engaged. And it's a challenge, right? Because you don't want to have everyone on every call, but at the same time, making sure that departments at least know when they can send a representative to the right things and sharing that piece out, I think is really valuable because it's taking a company from 10, 20 people up to 50 to 100, it's a big, big change because you can't speak to anyone when you join it anymore. And so you've got to have these pockets of dispersed knowledge.
And I was wondering what, you always spoke about training, messaging, clear messaging. What other processes and maybe systems you think are critical as you move through the gears from that 20 or 30 man team to, the 50s, 80s, 100s?
Oh my goodness.
Have I dropped you in it?
Well, no, it's just a brilliant question. And I don't know if I have a great answer, but I think a vision is really important.
Yeah.
You have to have something that people can just grab hold of, a sentence. And one thing I quite like, and I don't know if it works for everyone, but is each team, you should be able to look at it and kind of understand what their mission statement is.
Yeah.
And so actually, if you're doing like that, and early on, that team is a person, right? And that person has that mission statement. But as you bring people in and they fall under that same mission statement for their team, it just keeps you going in the right direction. Mm. And is so much about the foundation you set. And it is challenging, right? Because you want to scale, you need to hit the targets your investors set, or that you want to make your own money because it's your own business. Mm. But you've also got to do it in a way that you don't damage reputation, that you don't feel like your customers are suffering because you are. And that is a really tricky game. We've been pretty lucky that we've managed it, but I think a chunk of it has been by luck, not skill. Mm. And I think some of it is. And my former CEO, who's a wonderful man, he always said to me, timing is the most important thing in any business for it to be successful. The second is luck. And I think, that is true. There's work rate and all of that. But in some cases, if you're not lucky, if your big hit hits you at the wrong time, it can destroy your company, which sounds mad. Mm. If your influx of customers just hits you at the wrong time when people aren't trained up or you haven't got the processes in, it can dent your reputation forever. Mm. So just trying to have those foundations laid, and fingers crossed you can get them in before you have your big hit.
Yeah, I think there are some really salient points there. And, you know, I was thinking as you're talking, I was thinking that as you move through the years, it's also a chance for you to continue to learn, as you quite rightly said. Because what you want to do is you want to make certain that you aren't, at least you're definitely not reproducing maybe some of the things that you've done wrong in the past, and make certain that you build the right structures to help teams and the organization fit together. I'll give you an example. Recently, I was with a client, and they had a product velocity issue. So they weren't getting their product to market quick enough. But then as you unwrap that, actually the problem wasn't that they weren't getting their product to market quick enough. The problem was the product team was also the CTO team, i.e. the dev team. And on the other side of the coin, the sales team were inundating the dev team with 305 requirements on a daily basis. So actually that structure was broken. So what we did was, okay, that's not working, right? So let's break it up and let's put a simple design authority, product design authority board in place, so everyone can understand what the vision is, and then we can go off and start delivering to market. And, you know, it's not a 30-day activity, but putting that simple structure in at least helps people start communicating and understand that there is a process to get products to market quicker, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just wondering if you've used similar tactics to help, you know, improve structures and make, you know, get products to market quicker or things such as that.
Absolutely. One of the things you said brought something up in mind, because it was a brilliant, brilliant point, Richard. And the, I don't know if you've ever read The Phoenix Project. Anyone I used to go into a transformation project with, I used to go read The Phoenix Project. Yeah. And every company has a Brent. Everyone has like that person that a lot of people go through, especially in small companies. And I think one of the biggest challenges you can often have is when you have someone, and let's say you're a founder, this is the same problem, and it's just you initially, right? You do things the way they work for you because it works for you. That does not, and I've made this mistake in the past, and I hope I've learned from it, but I still don't think I'm very good at it. How do you make a process that isn't just what works for you, but is going to work for more people? And as you grow, remove some of that single man risk and all of that. Because when you are short on time and when you have got that person that loads of things funnel through, they will, you know, people always say, if you want something done, ask a busy person, right? There's absolutely, there's truth in that. But the reason they get so much done is because they've learned how to do it in a way that suits them. Mm. And that, and learning how to scale that out can be a massive, massive challenge. In terms of kind of speeding up go-to-market, it can be really challenging, can't it? I think one of the things I was told, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago, after I changed careers, but was the importance of mentors, champions, and your network. Mm. So when I moved to Strategic Blue, I'd made quite a lot of friends at Amazon Web Services and at other managed service providers. And do you know what I did? To help me get my message correct quicker, rather than kind of failing with a load of customers or maybe not getting it right, is I just went and I pounded my network and I just called in favors and I said, can I pitch to you? Can you tell me what's good and bad? And I asked some great salespeople, I asked some great finance people I knew, and people that knew me as well and knew where I was doing that whole thing of, Steve, you're doing that because that suits you. You're not going to be able to replicate that on someone else. And as you go through your career, even if you just meet someone that's quite interesting, that sparks something in you, reach out to them, connect to them, see if you can keep in some sort of touch, see if they can mentor you or you can mentor them, whichever direction it was, because it is your network, which you can use to fail fast in a safe environment. So you can start hitting that scaling quicker because you don't want to be failing on those early opportunities that can be making or breaking your company, right?
No, I mean, I love it. Absolutely love that. And we're talking quite philosophically, so I think it's must probably a good point to ask you what is your scaling philosophy? How have you built up your engine room and your knowledge to sort of tackle the problems that we've been chatting about?
It's a great question. I think the whole willingness to fail and to dust yourself off, that's the key part of my philosophy. And I think we're lucky in Strategic Blue, where we've got a lot of people who are willing to try things, are willing to put themselves out there. I think one of, if I look at the areas I struggle with, I'm good at getting messaging right, actually working out how to put that in different things. If, we find if you get someone on the phone to me or to my team, our ability to work out how we can help them. And that's why I think if you can believe that your products, your services are something that helps people, all selling becomes is making friends with someone and helping them out. Right. And there just happens to be a piece of paper that gets signed for it. What I find challenging, and there are some brilliant people out there that you can learn stuff from, and I'm still very much in this, is how to get your messaging out. And how to do that during a global pandemic is a whole different ball game. And my belief so far, and is working okay. I mean, so we are kind of 5 times bigger in the last 18 months. So something's going okay. And a lot of that is down to our CEO and founder and his network and our champions. But I think it's being willing to share knowledge, build a reputation of someone that people can go to and ask questions of, and that it's not just sales, sales, sales down your throat. Now, don't get me wrong, you have some products that are like that. But if you're in the fintech space, right, if you're being innovative, right, tell people, teach people what you're doing, what the benefits are, the challenges maybe they don't know, because there are so many brilliant companies out there that have a brilliant idea, but to the masses, they come across as a solution without a problem. Spend your time explaining the problem and educating people and giving your time willingly. And I think, what you give comes back. And I don't know whether I'll be proven right over the years, but that's my current philosophy. Be willing to fail. Be willing to give yourself and your company's knowledge to an extent. Obviously, don't give people the keys to the Ferrari, but be willing to share out there and answer some of the simple questions. Don't just assume that people know that this problem exists. Because you are a genius and have come up with it, doesn't mean that other people understand it. And I mean, it's not the best answer to that question, but it's kind of where my head's at the moment, at least.
No, I think it's bang on, right? I mean, I love it. Be willing to fail and communicate and share knowledge. And I think in fintech and financial services, I think it's even more important because, if I'm honest with you, I look around and there's not many that do it. I haven't seen a lot of people going out there and sharing that knowledge because for whatever reason, I think a lot of folk are quite technical. So they do struggle with the message, right? And they do struggle with, and therefore they do struggle with, in some instances, sharing that knowledge. So I think it's such a great philosophy, and one obviously you guys are getting results from, right?
Yeah, I say we've been lucky. We've worked very, very hard. We have worked to come up with some new engagement models that suit more people as well. Working out how we can address more of the market was a really interesting piece, especially for all the scale-ups out there who are looking at, future rounds of investment. How do you make yourself interesting? Well, you've got to understand a market fit, but have a massive addressable market, right? That is someone that can sell into anybody. It's a very attractive thing if they've got proven track record of doing it. So, the hard work from the team, and we've been very lucky in some of our hires. Sometimes people and you bring them in and that works. And I've brought a couple of people with me who have just been, sensational. I knew they would be. We've hired people off the back of a couple of interviews who we've kind of gone, well, they seem nice, they seem good, who have just been revolutionary to the business as well. And some of that is luck, and it's joyous when that happens, right? Because if they help you with that throughput. But yeah, we've seen real success. I think we're 5 or 5.2 times bigger than I'm arrogant, right? I'm an ego walking. That's why I lead the business acquisition. I look about since I joined. So, and I find that really, but again, I said earlier, I'm self-driven, right? And that's what drives me. I'm at that number. And, I have a number in my head about where I want to be next year versus where we started. And I look at my journey because that's just how my mind is. It just so happens that, I have aligned that to how our modeling has gone and what we should hit. But we want to be in a company in the early millions of things we're we were looking after a couple of years ago, we want to be 100 million within a year and a half. And that's really exciting, because to do that, all those things you've learned to get to this scale, you're going to some extent have to learn again and hope that you've got some of these things right. And it's got to, you've got to be iterative, you've got to be changing. And yeah, we've done well, but we're ambitious and we want to do better, and we want to help more people. And it's really nice, like I said earlier, it's so nice when you do feel like you're doing something that helps people.
And I mean listen, I think again what you say there is very, very interesting. And I wanted to ask you a question just around the social media effect. And we're talking about knowledge sharing, we're talking about messaging and communicating to investors and our target audience. How do you guys use, if you use it at all, how do you use those social media channels to sort of get your message out there?
No, that's a super question, my friend. So for years, I've been banging out content myself, not just writing it, but sharing stuff that I find interesting. I have to say, I've been much worse for that these last couple of months. See some kind of exciting family things going on my side. And I need to get back to it, because I do, you know, I do believe in that sharing. And so now I'm more kind of comment on things and stuff like that. But as a company, we've taken the same kind of mindset. We have a podcast called, you know, What's New in Cloud FinOps. And in that, we are very rarely really talking about strategic blue. We do a little bit, because sometimes we need to give that context, but it's a lot of it is about some of those questions that people never asked about FinOps. There's this new word, this new buzz term, but no one really gets what it means. And we've had, you know, people from big consultancy firms message and say, hey, I'm loving the podcast. It's helping me learn about what I'm having to move into. That's great. I've got friends at AWS who tell me, Steve, I listen to the podcast because it tells me what's going on in the other cloud providers. Hey, whatever works, you know, as long as you're sharing some knowledge around. And so we have that same kind of idea. We are sharing things that we think are interesting in the FinOps space, but also success stories, not just of ourselves, of our customers, but of our partners as well. And it's been really nice. Like, one of our now biggest customers didn't spend a penny with us for 9 months, right? They had credits and we just bought them in and we made absolutely no money. They are flying. And can I just say, they're a fintech as well, actually. I'll happily introduce them. They are flying and they are brilliant people. And you couldn't be more happy for a group of people that are flying. And they have done, you know, they have worked hard. They have found their market fit. They have banged on doors and they have built a brilliant piece of technology. And it's really enjoyable to share some of their successes on our social media. They have nothing to do with us. But, you know, if you're building out a community, or, and that's how I look at our social media, community of people we're sharing with, you know, it's just nice to share positive stories, especially with what's out there so often. And, you know, I'm a big football fan for my sins. And if I look at, I support Tottenham, and that's probably going to mean people start switching off.
Right? Okay. In the corner.
I tell you what, football Twitter, in the Spurs land at the moment is not a positive place to be. So it's quite nice in the workspace to be sharing things. And I'm a big fan of LinkedIn for that. And, you know, when it's used for the right things and sharing positive. Yeah, there's a load of stuff that's really salesy out there. Of course there is. You know, people are trying to grow. We do a lot of our reach out through LinkedIn. But I think as an organization, you can create a brand awareness and a brand that people can feel, if not attached to, warm about, because actually these guys are maybe just trying to do the right thing. And that's where we focus on it. I don't know whether we get it right. You know, our numbers are going up in the right direction, but that's one of the hardest things to get feedback about. I don't know about you, Richard. I do find it's quite hard to get people to kind of go what they think of your social media. Speaking to your customers and getting feedback there, and, you know, we use third parties to our case studies just so we get a real answer as to what they're doing. But yeah, that's a hard bit to get to know whether you're getting right. We follow our best guesses.
It sounds like you're getting feedback from some of the consulting guys, right? They're saying to you that they love your podcast, they're learning from it. And that is social media. It's a new medium, right?
Yeah.
True. So that's feedback. And I love the points you touched on and the words you, I guess, wrap this social media mechanism around. And that's community. And it is. We should treat it as a community and foster it, nurture it, and get good stuff out there and engage with people, right?
Absolutely. When it does, and it's a real pleasure, isn't it? When you can introduce someone that helps. And I'm not heavily involved in the DevOps world anymore, but I've got great friends in there who do brilliant work and work at all manner of company now. And if someone kind of says to me, oh, Steve, I've got this, I'll just go, well, let me introduce you to someone. You know, it's another way of doing your network. It allows you to extend your network. You know, I'm chatting to someone later that's based in Alaska. Without LinkedIn, awesome. I'd never come across him. And, you know, it's these kind of things.
Oh, nice one. And listen, I mean, as we sort of coming towards the end of the show, what I'd like to ask you is, what questions are you guys asking yourselves right now? And facts is you are considering as you move forward to stretch yourself to meet that, you know, 100 million target in a year and a half?
So our focus and our core focus and our OKRs are about standardization, sustainability, and automation, really. You know, I'm a big believer, and we are here. Anything you have to do three times, automate it. Right. If you have to repeat a task three times, automate. That's a very kind of blasé rule. But as a concept, I really like it. And so, you know, if you find that you're getting asked the same thing three times and you end up going and making that edit three times to three different people, do you not just make it an option for them to have? You know, try to really bring down your market fit to be something you can put more through the sausage machine and that kind of thing. And that's how we see doing it. We have done some crazy, wacky things for some incredibly complex organizations, and they have been brilliant fun, and we will continue to do those with a bit of our time. And you know, in fact, we've got a few lined up, but it's actually how do you make those so they are interesting short-term projects rather than long-term distractions. And the thing you don't want to get distracted from is that run rate business, those normal customers, those people you can help quickly and that can help you quickly, because you want to see those numbers going up and to the right, right? So our key focus is on how to make the journey, you know, frictionless for those people, how to get more, because we have a service layer wrapped on top of our tech layer as well. And people, some people take, some people don't. How do we actually make it that we continue to become more and more compelling at the tech layer only? How do we make it so that the things that we have in our brains, the things that we do in our heads, actually also can soon just be done by someone on a web portal? And that's where our key focuses are.
Makes complete sense, mate. And as all leaders and as people that like to continuously learn, what book are you reading right now, or have you read in the past that you think maybe our listeners would benefit from?
Well, so at the moment I'm reading, I kind of box between a fiction and a non-fiction. And I'm reading a book called The Mad Ship at the moment, which is brilliant, but I don't think will help anyone in the scale-up journey. One of the things I've enjoyed reading in the past and that I think people should read, especially in tech space, if you've not read the Phoenix Project or the DevOps Handbook, well worth a read. If you want to understand a little bit about the thing I spoke about earlier, which is super interesting, around general purpose technologies or the similarities between cloud and electricity, there's a book called The Big Switch from Edison to Google. And I get all of my staff to read at least the first half of that in the first 2 months. And then they have to read the Phoenix Project in the second, in the, you know, third and fourth months, because I do believe there are some brilliant books to help. And then for those that go into selling, I actually like Spin Selling as a book, because I really like that it actually points out that all those sales things you've heard for years, people using feel, felt, found, and all of that kind of stuff, it doesn't work when you're doing something that has real value to people. Mm-hmm. And you should really be thinking about value, 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 and how you can be helping people. So those are my three that I, you know, recommend to people as a starting point. All easy to read as well, especially the Phoenix Project. That's a marvel. I've met some of the guys that wrote it and they're just brilliant people. So yeah, they're my three. I know you only asked for one, but yeah, they're the three books I think are really helpful in the tech space, or, you know, if you want to learn about electricity and the cloud trading markets.
Yeah, awesome. And all of them sound absolutely fascinating. And listen, before we log off today, how can people get in touch with you and the guys at Strategic Blue if they want to?
Absolutely. So myself, my Stephen Old with a PH, old, just like old man. My wife hates it when I say that, but people laugh. And, you know, that's what we're about, isn't it? We can be found at strategic-blue.com, or you can find us just Strategic Blue on Twitter or LinkedIn. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm Old Dog New Tex. Old like my name, Old Dog New Tex.
Awesome.
And yeah, that's us.
Awesome. I'm going to have to tag you up on Twitter just to show my friends. I've got someone in my network that Twitter tag. Awesome, mate. So listen, it's been an absolutely amazing conversation today. Love chatting to you.
It's been a pleasure being
here. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Thank you so much for giving me the time. And yeah, great podcast. And I really hope that it continues as strongly as it is at the moment.
Okay. Awesome, mate. Speak soon. Yeah.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.